Welcome back to Start Kyle Orton. I'm Travis. With me, as always, is Kyle, and we have reached the true end of the off season. Here we are, Kyle. We stand on the precipice. Tomorrow, there's football. 3 days from now, 4 days from now, who cares? There's Bears football. Here, tonight, today, whatever you people are listening to this, we're going to wrap up Hard Knocks. We're going to wrap up the offseason, the final roster cuts, and we are going to preview a football game. We're going to preview Bears-Titans. So what do you want to start with, buddy?
Let's just roll with episode 4 of Hard Knocks. To be honest, I really didn't feel like there was a whole hell of a lot worth discussing from that episode, other than they seem to have been setting up the Velus Jones redemption arc, which we get a little bit more of in his actual existence on the 53-man roster, and then also in episode 5. And then also, I think we all feel pretty bad for Ian Wheeler. That was pretty brutal to watch him tear his ACL, especially as they spent the whole episode, as you noted when we were talking, kind of building up this story that was very painful when you know. There's a, you know, those awful, like, scary movie, like the parody movies where they, I've never actually watched this one, but I have seen this clip for some reason. They did like a sports movie kind of thing. And there's the star running back that they keep implying is going to be Booby Miles. And they're just like, the coach keeps calling him ACL tear. And the, the player's like, no, my name is Asiel Terry. Like,
right,
that's how the Ian Wheeler thing felt, if you knew what was about to happen. And like I said, my wife was like, oh, this kid's a really good story. And I was like, yeah, about that. But
it is weird watching Hard Knocks when you are like super connected and invested to the team, right? And you're following all of the training camp stuff. And then you go in here, and you're definitely not the intended audience. It's strange because it feels like they're not really asking for Bears fans to watch, or Bears fans who are like, you know, on Twitter all day wondering about what's happening at camp and practice and all of this, and knowing that, like, oh, this fifth string running back tore his ACL in this meaningless preseason game. So from a dramatic perspective, I could see, okay, I know that Ian Wheeler tears his ACL. I see what you're doing, HBO. But yeah, for poor Mrs. Sko over there, just walking in like a deer into the headlights, not knowing that her boy was about to be down for the year.
Yeah, there were tears. There was definitely, she was like, can you imagine if our kids were that close to their dream? And that happened. But, you know, I kind of agree with Ryan Poles where he was like, you know what, your IR is technically on the rosters. Like, you get to be in the facility all year. We'll keep you around. He'll probably get a chance to earn a spot next year in camp. So I don't think it's the end of the story for Ian Wheeler. That was pretty rough because he was one of the few, I think, kind of interesting. There's been about like 4 storylines, I feel like, overall in Hard Knocks. Number one, of course, is Caleb Williams. And is he the savior the Bears have been looking for?
Yep.
That one's got some juice to it. But that one kind of went on the back burner in episode 4, although it's back a little bit in episode 5. Then there was Matt Eberflus. He's sexy now. That one has no juice whatsoever. There's the like roster flotsam, like the competition with guys like Velus and Ian Wheeler that are trying to make the team. And then there's the kind of the backup quarterback situation with Tyson Bagent and Brett Rippon and all that. None of those are super compelling beyond the Caleb arc, in my opinion. I was actually thinking, like, Hard Knocks. We talked about how, you know, Hard Knocks 10, 15 years ago, like the Jets season with Rex Ryan. Like, you got to see a pretty acrimonious contract negotiation with Darrell Revis holding out. There was Kellen Clemens kind of famously telling, like, Mike Tannenbaum to go fuck himself when he cut him. That Joe McKnight, who was a relatively high draft pick, I think he was a 3rd round pick, maybe. Like, they focused a lot on how badly he was struggling in camp, which nowadays they would never let happen. Like, no one would ever be like, oh, yeah, our current year 3rd round pick has hands of stone. Like, this is a story arc we want out there.
Yeah, you know, I mean, I notably, like, again, like, they stayed so far away from Nate Davis this entire season.
Yeah, they didn't mention
his name once.
There were a couple big scraps that were reported on Twitter by the Beats who were at camp.
Yeah.
Didn't get a whiff of that.
Yeah.
I mean, honestly, I think a story arc that they could have covered is the fact that JT O'Sullivan kicked up a shitstorm trying to say that Keenan Allen was fat and slow. Now,
I was going
to
say, no interest in media coverage,
I think,
right, that
it,
was happening.
Right. I think they did it kind of subtly with Keenan Allen. There was a big, like, I feel like there was a big section of episode 3, especially against the Bengals, dedicated to how much Keenan Allen was carving them up. But it was subtle. They didn't say, like, why they were focusing on Keenan Allen. But, like, I felt like it could have been, like, Keenan Allen, 10 years ago, they'd be like, Keenan Allen, the 11-year NFL veteran, wants one more big contract. But they say he's slowed down and have him talk about, like, the haters and how he's going to show them that, you know, he hasn't slowed down. And maybe even show a clip that implies, like, maybe he would have made that catch if he was a step faster. Like, that's something I feel like Hard Knocks would have done 10, 15 years ago. They're not doing it now. But yeah, the one thing that they did cut last year at the Jets' request that they were allowed to show, which will transition into episode 5, they were able to show some guys getting cut. And I really thought the McCaskies might keep that whole thing going. But I actually also think it was a smart move for them to allow them to show the cuts, because I think if you are a free agent and you are considering that, and even if you're just a marginal free agent, you're an undrafted free agent, you're a guy, you know, I feel like Ryan Poles comes off really well in those scenes of the cuts and how he handles it and how he cares about this. And I think if you're a free agent, can't believe I'm saying this, but the environment that the Bears have set up looks pretty promising for them. They really consider things very deeply, and they definitely don't treat players like faces or numbers. This is not Bill Belichick. It's Patriots out there. Like, they really, you know, like Ryan Poles said, we can't sit there and say constantly, like, we are going to build this program through the people we care about developing every one of these guys, and then turn around at cut time and just not give a shit. Like, it's got to hurt a little bit.
Right.
So I think it was smart of them to show the cuts. I think Ryan Poles comes off really well. I think we were all pretty moved by him needing to take a minute to compose himself before cutting Adrian Colbert.
Interesting, to see cuts go through, and the players seem, you know, pretty upbeat, pretty hopeful. And then it's really the GM and the assistant GM and the coaches who are just, like, distraught about having to cut guys.
Well, I think it's something to, again, if I have concerns about this Bears team, it's still at a couple frontline spots, you know, like, we're still worried about that other starting defensive end. We're still a little worried about the starting guards, but, like, this is a Bears team that's pretty set and pretty deep in terms of quality depth on the offensive line and the defensive line. I feel much better in the depth than I do in the top line there. And so there really weren't a lot of traditional camp competitions like you would think of. I mean, there's really not even a competition for that second edge right now. Everyone knows that, you know, on first and second down, that's DeMarcus Walker's position. The competition, if there is one, is who's going to be that pass rushing specialist. But, like, otherwise, the secondary, set it and forget it, man. The linebacking core, set it and forget it. Every other part of the defensive line. The offensive line, the only drama has come from whether Nate Davis is going to be available or not, but he's the starting right guard when he's available. The wide receiver pecking order's set. So the camp battles were really, you know, guys that probably knew coming into camp that they were always outside the 53-man looking in, so I don't think there was a ton of surprise in any of them. I think they could probably tell from how the depth charts worked their way out all through camp. Like, in some ways, it would have been much more interesting to cover a much worse Bears team 2 years ago in 2022 when you had a legit wide receiver 2 competition between Equanimeous St. Brown and N'Keal Harry, Dante Pettis.
That's right. battle.
So I guess it's kind of, you know, you want to complain that Hard Knocks is kind of boring television. It's because in 3 years, the Bears have really turned this roster over and got it to where it's not littered with question marks entering the season.
Yeah. Yeah. I guess we talk about one guy. You mentioned him a little bit in episode 4. He got a little bit more time in episode five. Velus Jones remains on the roster. He is the fifth running back and the sixth wide receiver, though it sounds a lot like, just given what they were saying during the episode, he's much more of a special teams acquisition. I thought it was kind of interesting. The way they were setting up their roster, they were talking about it like, well, we have three spots we need for special teams. And they weren't really considering position at that point. And I do wonder if that's what we're thinking about for Velus here. Like, is he a special teams guy? How often does the fifth running back see the field in a season? You know, how often does the sixth wide receiver really play? But the special teams coach seemed like he really wanted Velus to stay on the team. And there was a moment there, Kyle, where Ryan Poles seemed shocked and relieved that the coaching staff wanted to keep Velus. Is that also what you got out of that segment?
Yeah, I kind of felt like, so we've talked about Ryan Poles extensively, obviously, and we've talked about, you know, he's made some mistakes. To me, the biggest one was the Chase Claypool trade, obviously. But the one thing we've really liked about him is he does not seem to let his pride get in the way, and he will cut bait on a bad decision, which he did with Claypool. And so I felt like he came into camp like, okay, if the coaches don't want to keep Dominic Robinson, if the coaches don't want to keep Velus Jones, that's that. I gotta accept it. I gotta move on. So he, I think, was kind of happy to have the coaching staff, especially the special teams coach and the running backs coach, both make an argument for keeping Velus. It did not look like a Ryan Poles decision, which, again, I was not mad that Velus Jones made the roster at this point. Like, it's very, very disappointing that a third round pick in his third year is wide receiver six, running back five, special teamer. Like, that's the best you can hope for.
Yep.
It'll always have been one of the worst draft picks in terms of process, taking a 25-year-old dude who had a poor history of production, poor ball skills, just because you were enamored basically with his weight and his 40 time. That was a bad pick. He's done nothing to justify it since. But at the same time, you can separate the fact that, like, Velus Jones is never going to justify the draft pick that got him on the roster with Velus Jones isn't really that much worse than the 53rd man on most NFL rosters. He's a special teamer. So it's really not worth getting up in arms about. And yeah, like Flew said, he really is a dude that has that ability, especially with the new kickoff return rules. You know, he could potentially take a couple to the house. So they're reluctant to throw that away. I don't know that the possibility that he can do that outweighs the possibility that he's going to fucking muff another one and all of that. But you can see why they're still not quite willing to completely throw in the towel on that experiment. I'm not surprised to be in the roster. I think I was pleasantly surprised that Ryan Poles seemed like he was ready to walk away if that's what his coaching staff wanted there, which is what you want to see.
Yeah, his reaction definitely told me that he thought walking into that room like, okay, they're going to say they want to cut Velus and I have to be okay with that. You know, we didn't see anything really with Dom Robinson at all. Like, I don't even recall a segment in any of these episodes on Dom Robinson. And as much as I have detested the Dominique Robinson experience over the last few years, I do have to admit he looked good out there in a couple of preseason games. He looked good against the ones in a couple of games. Like, he really did push guys. I'm not sure that I have much hope that he'll be able to do that during the season, but I can say that, you know, compared to what else we have at that other edge rushing spot, I do think Dom earned his spot on this roster, which is big. I guess the other thing I could say about Poles clearly being surprised that Velus is going to continue to be on this roster and being happy about it is, he does still have those attachments to his guys, right? Like, he's still clearly a guy who is pulling for dudes like Velus and dudes like Dom. And that can be a weakness. Like, if we could say this guy has a weakness, that's probably it, right? Everything else he seems pretty good about. The Chase Claypool thing was a misfire, but, I mean, you're going to have those every once in a while. I wonder if this is going to be his sticking point, right? Like, how much is it going to take before we don't have Velus Jones on this roster?
It's a good question. One thing I was going to say about Poles also is that I feel like he I pointed this out to you the other day. We've made fun of Poles, not made fun of. We have made a trope, a meme, if you will, out of Ryan Poles being a relative athletic score obsessed junkie.
Yeah.
But like I noticed that they're looking that Austin Booker's relative athletic score is not super impressive. He's not a freak athlete. He is a dude that they drafted, though, because he has a couple of very specific moves. Like, he's got a skill set. You see the power that he gets and the way he's able to drive tackles back consistently. So I was going to say that also is a place where I think, you know, Ryan Poles has maybe self-scouted a little bit. And he was like, okay, we drafted Domrob in the fifth round, even though he really couldn't play defensive end yet because of the athletic upside.
Yep.
Here you, the next time you take a fifth round edge, it's Austin Booker, where the athletic upside's not quite what you think based on the relative athletic score, but he's got a couple of tools that have translated pretty quickly to looking like an NFL defensive end. So I appreciate a little bit of learning there, a little bit of change, a little bit breaking his type a little bit. So
Booker is an interesting pick, and it's interesting because I think so during the episode, Poles also mentioned he's not going to take anything less than a fourth round pick for Bayless, which was kind of humorous. But I think it shows what he thinks of fifth round and later picks. I think he thinks of them as trash. Yes. He thinks of them as trade bait. He doesn't think anything of them. Part of the thing with Booker is Booker wasn't really a fifth round pick. Because we traded next year's fourth round pick for him. So he's really a fourth round pick to Ryan Poles. You were warning me about that before I watched the episode. You were like, oh, he said he wouldn't take anything less than a fourth. And I was like, well, yeah, but that's just him saying he doesn't give a shit about fifth round picks.
Also, speaking of Hard Knocks episode 5, I warned you about this dude. Did you catch the surprise Mark Bradley cameo? Did you see
it? I didn't see Mark Bradley at all.
When they were talking about Ryan Poles getting cut in that very office once upon a time.
Yeah.
They showed some footage from 2008 Bears training camp.
They showed Grossman in camp, yeah.
Who did Grossman complete the pass to, my friend?
It was
Mark Bradley.
You told me before we watched that episode there was a Mark Bradley cameo. Dude, I was staring this episode down, waiting for him to come in the building and be like, Mark Bradley here to talk to you guys about something. Like, I don't know what, but he never did.
Mark Bradley was so funny because he was a second-round pick. I remember he had that one game against the Detroit Lions as a rookie, I believe. Him and Kyle Orton hooked up on a couple of skinny posts, and then he just was hurt all the time. For like 3 years, we kept being like, well, you know, maybe Mark Bradley something when he comes back. I also remember that, like, in Madden, I feel like he was like an 82 for like 3 years in a row for no apparent reason other than that once upon a time he had been a second round pick. But yeah, it made me laugh to see Rex Grossman completing a pass to Mark Bradley in that little clip of Ryan Poles.
The 2008 season.
That would have been a Hard Knocks worth covering the Bears because you had a quarterback competition between Kyle and Rex. So that would have been interesting. Yeah. We were discussing on Twitter, like, which Bears season would have been the funniest for Hard Knocks to cover. And I think without question, we all agreed it would have been Mark Trestman's second camp. When Martellus Bennett body slammed Kyle Fuller and Brandon Marshall was just going rogue and you had Jay already chafing about being asked to throw 30 wide receiver screens a game.
It had to be a Trestman year. You absolutely, number one, it had to be a Brandon Marshall year.
Yeah, without question.
Because I want the whole thing about Brandon Marshall, without a doubt.
The Trubisky Foles camp battle would have been pretty funny too, I think, to have Hard Knocks cover. The only other thing I think I had to say about Hard Knocks episode 5, Travis, I haven't been as cynical as you about the Caleb Williams experience. You are adamant that you will not allow hope to creep in until the kid does something.
That's right.
But I've been cynical. I mean, I have kept myself. I've tried to be reserved.
You've done your best.
But I actually tweeted about, you know, the little montage at the end of the episode. I was like, man, this thing is like a fucking battering ram to the fortress of cynicism that I have built around my heart when it comes to the Bears. I mean, I have to say that fucking montage ending with Caleb just breathing and exhaling and being, all right, let's go. How did that make you feel? Did that put any dent into your icy heart?
No, I would not say so. I would say earlier in the episode, the editing was pretty intense. The moving between the plays and Caleb's over here. And then we go back and Caleb's over here running a play. I was like, holy shit. Like,
that was fucking sick. And I do feel like, it's easy. It's a made for TV story to have Hard Knocks be like, oh, Caleb Williams has really gotten better as camp has gone along, blah, blah, blah.
Yeah.
Not such a hopeful note. But I do feel like that actually matches with what the boots on the ground are saying. You know, there was some nervousness the first week or two of camp about, you know, Caleb Williams having a couple rough moments here and there, the defense consistently winning. But, like, the narrative definitely does seem to be that, like, by the end of camp, everyone felt very confident in Caleb's running of the offense and the offensive operation, and the penalties disappeared and the bad throws disappeared. And he was spinning it better than he had all camp there towards the end. So yeah, I do think there is some, it's not just made for TV. There's some truth to the narrative that I think Caleb Williams certainly got better as camp went along, which you would expect for a rookie in his first ever camp. But we've had the opposite happen, haven't we, before? So,
well, that's another thing. I don't know whether or not to be pleased at how positive Hard Knocks was on the Bears, or upset that it just didn't broach any of these subjects I really wanted him to broach. I wanted to know about the offensive line. That's the place of greatest turmoil on the Bears, and has been for the last few years, right? They never mentioned Justin Fields, which is kind of odd with Poles there and Caleb is taking over for someone else. We aren't talking about
that.
You know, very general, very vague about past QB failure. Like, we just replaced a guy.
That felt intentional to me.
Yeah,
like, that felt
absolutely.
Like, that felt like the McCaskies and Poles and Kevin Warren were very much like, we don't want to talk about Justin Fields. We don't want, we're done.
Yep.
We are on to Cincinnati.
Yeah.
So that felt like something intentional that I agree. I mean, would have made for a better story for sure, but I can understand from an org standpoint why the Bears really just want to pretend that debate was never there. And also for some of you on Twitter who, you know, you've gotten less frequent in my mentions of late. I want to say, like, this man, Justin Fields, was in a camp competition with Russell Wilson, who is a shambling corpse of himself at this point. And he missed the majority of camp with a calf injury, giving Justin a golden opportunity to seize that job and never look back. And he fell flat on his face. So, like, and this is,
he looks real bad out there, guys.
This is again,
he looks real bad.
This is after every NFL team could have had him for the low, low price of a fifth rounder, and they all said no.
Yep.
So, like, you should maybe reflect on that. Like, listen to what the universe is probably telling you at this point.
He also managed to go into the media and talk about how his offensive line maybe needed to improve.
Oh, God. I didn't even see that. Oh, geez.
Yeah, he is having a very bad time in Pittsburgh right now.
Okay.
Well, there's a discussion to be had later, much later in the season, about if you can ruin a quarterback. I think we have that planned out for later, but Justin is such a sad example.
Yeah.
But yeah, I mean, again, I wanted some questions answered. You know, sometimes you want to see an interview and you want to see the tough questions get thrown out there because you want to know, like, what does Poles think about this? Like, what did you do? Did you screw him up that first year? Is that why you're surrounding Caleb with talent? Because you think that part of your roster construction is what destroyed Justin Fields? Like, but on the other hand, nah, I got 5 episodes of largely positive thinking about the Bears, which I'm not against.
Well, to be fair, I think it all kind of points in the same direction, because it's not just that you have the Hard Knocks narrative, but, like, this is again, one of only six teams in NFL history that we have, we know of at least, to have a 60-point or greater point differential in the preseason. Like, it looked like a smooth operation in preseason. Yeah. It really did on both sides of the ball. Like this, and the reports coming out of camp are that the reports coming out of the scrimmage against the Bengals are that this is a defense that looks very competent. This is a young quarterback who's gotten better every day as he went along. So, like, it, you know, it could just be, you know, everything could go to shit in a couple days. Like, it could be a disaster week one. We realize we've got a long way to go still. But, like, on the other hand, maybe the good vibes are just because there are good vibes. Maybe. Yeah.
I mean,
maybe they're earned.
Today we got the Athletic Positivity Index for NFL fan bases, and the top three teams where fan bases are the most positive are the Lions, the Chiefs, and then the Bears. The Bears are right there with them. Almost 98% of Bears fans polled were largely positive about the season here. Saints fans only 18% positive at the bottom. What's going on, New Orleans? Not that bad down there, guys. Like,
I mean,
they're not some teams in the league, all right? The Panthers were above them.
Okay, but like, but if you're a okay, here's the thing. If I was a Panthers fan, and you have to remember this is a fan.
Break this down to me.
It's a fan vote. I'm sitting there and I'm telling myself, and I'm manifesting. I'm like, Bryce, year two quarterbacks. They take a leap in year two. We've added help. We got a second Jonathan Mingo to go along with our first Jonathan Mingo. We're collecting.
It's fantastic.
Jonathan Mingo variants, which is, I guess, a recipe for success. We have a new head coach.
Bring in Barkevious.
They've got all the requisite things that you tell yourself just matter. So if I'm Carolina, like, I mean, I wouldn't, because I'm smart and discerning.
So you're saying this is a hope thing.
But if it's a hope meter. So yeah. Panthers fans,
it's a bar of hope.
You can be a better team without hope, because bad teams are often full of hope. I mean, Cal, shit. Commanders fans, I'm pretty sure that's going to be a disastrous team, but they are. Oh, buddy, they are full of hope. Woo.
Yeah, they are.
They are.
Now, I actually wanted to say that on the pod before we go much further.
Well, let me finish my thought here, because I was circling back to the Saints.
That is a team
that's been spinning its wheels since Drew Brees retired. They have the ultimate. A lot of late Cutler era Bears vibes from
that's
that
true.
Saints team right now, where it's like, maybe you'll win 7, maybe you'll win 8, maybe you'll win 9, but, like, you know, that's not going to matter. And you also have no idea where the next great Saints team is coming from right now. You can't envision the path. So that, if I were a Saints fan, yeah, I would agree. I would be like, I would feel like I felt when the Bears signed Andy Dalton before they drafted Fields. I'd be like, I mean, sure, gosh. I guess maybe I can see the world where this is like a wild card team, but like not a good one. And then it's impossible to envision a scenario where next year you're not something akin to horrible, but you have no exit strategy.
Yeah. Okay. All right. You sold me. I'm sorry, Saints fans. Okay.
Go.
You mentioned Washington. I did want to mention this on this podcast because we get a lot of conversation now from Commanders fans, and I know why. We know what happened. I can see the data, folks. You came on when we started talking about Caleb Williams, because people were talking about the Commanders trading up to get Caleb Williams, all right? You stayed for Drake May. You stayed for Jaden Daniels. I can see you listening to us in Virginia and D.C. and the southern tip of New York and Baltimore. I know who you are, all right? And I want you to know that we don't hate you. We here at Start Kyler appreciate the Commanders fan, all right? We have no grudge against Commanders fans. The organization? Oh, absolutely. I don't think either of us cares for the org. But the fans, I understand why you want to hope. We have been there. We are not attacking you personally. However, our opinion on Jaden Daniels is not going to change just because you guys keep listening. I'm so sorry you passed on Drake May.
To be clear, I have a specific grudge against one Commanders fan, the one
do tell
that retweeted all of my stuff during the May versus Daniels debate while that was a debate. Mm-hmm. And then
yes,
once Washington drafted Jaden Daniels, he decided to tell me that I was a fucking idiot who didn't know shit about the kind of scheme that they were going to run on it, which is really funny to say to me specifically, because like, guys, I have watched Cliff Kingsbury since he was the quarterback at Texas Tech. Like, there is no offensive coordinator on earth besides maybe John Shoup, who is more of a known quantity to me personally. I know what Cliff's going to do. Everyone knows what Cliff's going to do. And in the preseason, I think Commanders fans are trying to convince themselves that he was hiding the ball a little bit. But, like, no, Cliff did what Cliff's going to do. It's going to be RPOs. It's going to be quick hitters outside the numbers. You are going to line up Terry McLaurin as the left outside wide receiver. You're not going to move him. You're not going to do motion. You're not going to do any of that. So yeah, that comment really pissed me off. Like, trust me, buddy. I know Cliff Kingsbury. I have stared into his goddamn Las Vegas Strip imitation Ryan Gosling act before. I know him. I have seen through him.
You know what? Cliff Kingsbury is no Graham Harrell. That's for damn sure, Kyle.
You know what? If the Commanders want to save Jaden Daniels right now, they go out and hire Sonny Cumbie. That's what they do.
Bring me Sonny Cumbie right this goddamn instant.
Bring me B.J. Simmons. goddamn it. No. Anyways.
Just a short aside, Commanders fans, I know you're sore right now. Once the Commanders start really getting beat up during the season, you come back here, we'll laugh about it, we'll pass you a digital brewski, and you can cry your tears while some Bears fans talk about the plight of the Washington Commanders.
Yeah.
This is a perfect time, though, Kyle, with absolutely no transition whatsoever to start talking about this next week of football and who the Bears are actually playing.
Yeah, so we've got the Bears versus the Titans. Now, this is a game that, for me, like, if it was week 11, I don't think I'd have much problem being like, yeah, I feel confident the Bears win this one. But it's week one. Mm-hmm. Important to note, every year, weird bullshit happens week one. Every year. And then you're talking a rookie quarterback on top of that. So I want folks to be prepared. It's not going to matter. Everyone's going to panic.
Nobody's prepared.
But, like, some weird shit could happen. It really could.
Caleb, I mean, do you remember? You remember when the Bears opened the season beating the 49ers, like in that awful monsoon?
Right. Just there was,
apropos of nothing, a terrible Bears team beat a great 49ers team. It's just random shit occurs.
So that said, this game I do think really just comes down to how well and how quickly Caleb Williams acclimates, because I feel pretty darn confident in this defense and this secondary versus Will Levis. I feel fairly confident in the Bears' skill players against specifically these linebackers. I do think they've got Jeffrey Simmons, so it's a defensive line that you can't ignore. Although I don't think they've got anyone really super dominant other than Simmons, obviously. This linebacking core is pretty weak. It sounds like Jamal Adams might be out this week anyways, and he's more of a linebacker than a safety anyways when he does play. Obviously, Legarius needs a good corner. Not so sure about the other that they have. I think there will be matchups for the Bears to exploit, is what I'm saying. It just comes down to how quickly the rookie quarterback is able to exploit them. It comes down to how much they're comfortable letting him try to exploit them. I can see them trying to lean heavy on the run game in this game, obviously. But yeah, for me anyways, it really does just come down to, and I don't think I want anyone to be mad at the kid forever if he doesn't pull it off in his first career start. What for you, Travis, what does this game come down to? And what are reasonable expectations for Caleb? What would Caleb have to do, I guess, in this game to really panic you?
Reasonable. I mean, you mentioned leaning on the run game, something that we haven't talked about much because we didn't see it too much in the preseason. DeAndre Swift, from what everybody had said, was like the star of camp. Like, he was just shredding dudes. This is all that I heard was like, DeAndre Swift looks fantastic. We just didn't see it in the preseason. I expect them to absolutely run the ball with DeAndre a lot. I feel like I would only be disturbed by Caleb's play if he goes out there and he just starts, you know, like three interceptions. He looks out of sorts. He's not hitting his targets. He's shaky out there, which isn't what I expect from him. But that would definitely, I would be like, oh, great, here we go again. Yet again, the Bears bring in a quarterback, and he's going to be turnover prone. He's out there goofing off, doing some Johnny Manziel bullshit, which is absolutely not what I expect. But I mean, that's worst case scenario, right? He goes out there and he has the Justin game. Jeffrey Simmons just runs straight through Nate Davis, right? And just hits him and hits him and hits him.
That would be the concern, is the Justin Fields game, obviously. And I just don't think we're going to get that. Now, great, in the world where he goes 17 of 28 for 195 yards, one touchdown, one interception, he's just kind of moved. It could happen. Like, it's his first career start. I did look back to kind of look at, like, so Joe Burrow, I believe, threw for 193 yards, one touchdown, one interception in his first start. Baker Mayfield threw for, I believe, 205 yards, one touchdown, no interceptions, I think it was. Kyler Murray threw for 303 yards on 54 attempts. Because Cliff.
Jesus Christ, Cliff.
Because Cliff.
Jesus Christ.
I think he had two touchdowns, two interceptions. So, you know, if you average it out, really, the number one overall picks that I think are most comparable to Caleb in their first start, you know, 205, 210, 220 yards seems a reasonable ask there. But yeah, I mean, I think you're going to see a lot of boot action for sure, a lot of screens, a lot of run game. Probably we haven't really seen them do any of this intentionally, but I think maybe a couple, you know, zone read type plays with Caleb, get him, you know, maybe some easy yards on the ground. Definitely going to be, I think, a game manager game script until they feel confident he can handle more. But I think he can execute that. I do. The offensive line.
We're going to find out how much confidence the staff has in Caleb Williams real quick, right? Because this is not, I mean, in my opinion, the Titans are a bottom tier team in the NFL this year. The defense, I know that the Titans tend to cobble together a defense that is better than the sum of its parts. Like that's all you can ever say about the Titans, right? It's like, I don't know any of these guys, and individually they don't seem that good, but they seem to perform admirably. But man,
but it's worth noting
low also, on talent, Kyle. They are low on talent.
But it's also worth noting that the architect of those gritty defenses is no longer here. Like
true.
Mike Vrabel was, I really think Mike Vrabel was kind of the Lovie Smith of this era. He got, on the one hand, he got more out of rosters than just about anybody, but at the same time, he had a very specific style of play that nonetheless capped their ceiling too. But yeah, so I don't know that you can necessarily, I think a lot of people are like, well, you take the Titans defense from last year, which I believe was 18th in DVOA, and you add this guy and this guy, and you're probably looking at a top 15 defense. But I don't know that you can do that, because I don't know that the 18 part of that was real, or if that was a Vrabel underachievement. If the true talent level of the defense is really more like 25-ish, and then you add a new defensive coordinator and you add some talent, like you could see a defense that's marginally worse in terms of results. So, no, yeah. I mean, to me, they're just, like, they are a team that really, I think they're a nice test for week one, because I don't think they are, you said bottom tier, I think they are more, like, lower middle class to me. They seem like a 7-win team when I look at them, which is a nice test. You know, it's not a cakewalk against a team that's likely going to compete for the first overall pick, but it's also not a playoff team where you'd be a heavy underdog week one. So I think that obviously Jeffrey Simmons is a monster. We have some concerns about the Bears interior offensive line. That's going to be a key matchup worth watching. I do think, you know, they've got names in that wide receiver core now, but I don't know, but all three of them are 29 years old. I think their best days potentially behind them, you know, New Hopkins. It's been a little while since we've seen him at his best. Calvin Ridley was not what a lot of people were expecting last year in Jacksonville. Tyler Boyd's just a nice slot receiver. I feel pretty confident in Tyler Gordon versus Tyler Boyd. So, yeah, I think this is a matchup the Bears secondary should win. And I think this is a scheme that is very much built to confuse quarterbacks who are not good, quick decision makers. And I do not think Will Levis is a good, quick decision maker. If you look at him last year, you know, he had some big moments, mostly off of like deep drop, play action, design shot plays. But in the true drop back game, it was pretty bad. The results were pretty awful. Again, I have preached the gossip, or I have preached the gospel of pressure to sack rate over and over and over. And Will Levis, I know he played with a bad offensive line last year. I know he had a bad offensive line his last year at Kentucky. But this was a guy who I believe had a pressure to sack rate of almost 27% in college, which again, we've talked about, like, even if you have a bad offensive line, that's a QB stat. He had a pressure to sack rate, I believe, over 20% last year with the Titans. He was on pace for like a 55 sack pace if he had played the whole season. So I think this is a guy that you can, if you can stop the run, which the Bears defense do very well, they were the best run defense in the NFL last year, and I have no reason to believe they've gotten worse, especially with a whole year, hopefully now, of Montez Sweat. If you can stop the run, force them into obvious passing situations, which again, I think the Bears can do, make Will Levis read it out, deny him his first read, and I think Jalen Johnson can do that. Then you can really, the potential for this kid to make some mistakes, take some sacks, really expands.
Yeah. I mean, yeah, you're talking about talent level. That's what I look at with this Titans team, right? Without Vrabel, do we really have anything on this defense? We've got two guys. You've got Jeffrey Simmons, obviously. You've got L'Jarius Sneed in the secondary. And then past that, it's a whole lot of meh on this team. T'Vondre Sweat does not really move the needle for me. I was not a huge fan of him coming out of this draft. The defensive ends just aren't anything. I guess the edge rushers in this case really aren't anything. The linebackers are who they are. You know, I love Amani Hooker. Every Hawkeye has a place in my heart, but you know, that's an okay safety. It's a kind of mid secondary when you get past L'Jarius Sneed. And then, yeah, you go to the offensive side of the ball and it's these wide receivers. It's this weird collection of wide receivers who everybody has heard of, but it just feels like, you know, you have like one struggling year and for one reason or another, you know, Hopkins had the injury. Calvin Ridley was out for gambling. Tyler Boyd always kind of disappears into that third wide receiver role, no matter where he is. And then, yeah, it all comes down to Will Levis at quarterback. And we have plenty of tape on this podcast about what we think of Will Levis. And it's just, see, I'm not going to be as kind as you about this or as level-headed as you. This isn't the Packers we're playing the first game, right? Where I would say, okay, we're going to get our ass kicked, but whatever, I'm not going to read too much into it. To me, this is like, look, man, if you want to succeed this season, if you want to compete as a team, this is the kind of team you got to beat. You got to beat Tennessee at home. Like, you know, you should show them the difference in your talent levels, right? And I do think, for one thing, the biggest weakness here, offensively for the Titans and defensively for the Bears, the best matchup we've got is going to be our edge rushers versus their tackles. They have an okay interior line, I think. Cushenberry's pretty decent. Dylan Reduns is a totally, like, cromulent right guard, and they've got Skronsky at left guard, who was, like, decent last year, and you would think he's going to take a bit of a step forward this year. So they have a decent interior. Their tackles, moving J.C. Latham out to left tackle, I think, is a poor decision. We talked, I think we both agreed during this draft season that Latham, he's kind of a Darnell Wright guy, right? You just take him and you say, oh, all right, we've got our right tackle for the next 8 to 10 years. That's great. They moved him to left tackle. Now, they did that because Nicholas' little brother, Petit Frere, I guess they didn't want to have him at left tackle. They didn't want to expose Levis to that. This is a guy who has been miserable his first 2 years in the league. His first year was extremely poor. He was then suspended for gambling. Then he played like about 150, a little under 150 snaps of truly reprehensible football. And then he went on IR for the rest of the season last year. That is the dude, right? You want to line Montez Sweat up on little brother and treat him like little brother the entire game. And I think that's what I want to see most. I want to see, can this Bears defensive line generate the kind of pressure that will elevate them to being a top 10 unit in the NFL? If you can't do it here, with Montez Sweat having an easy matchup against an awful tackle, what is it going to take, right?
Well, and I think I also would caution against reading too much into this game in that regard, because I actually do think they could get a couple of sacks, and I don't know that the main driver of the sacks will be defensive line pressure so much as I think it could be Will Levis, and I think it could be the secondary kind of forcing him into some coverage sack situations. Because, again, kind of important to note for Will Levis, so he had a game, he came in, he played against, started against the Atlanta Falcons. He went 19 of 29 for 238 yards, 4 touchdowns, no interceptions. Averaged over 8 yards per attempt. It was a lot. If you watch the game, it was a lot of schemed deep play action, deep shots downfield to take advantage of his big arm. After that one game, after defenses had a little bit of tape and they're like, oh, okay, here's what they're going to try to do. And it was they're not super similar players in a lot of ways, but it was kind of Will Levis last year when he had success was kind of like how Justin Fields always had success, where it had to be deep drop, play action, scheme, heavy vertical. Couldn't ask him to do straight drop back stuff. Anyways, after that first game, for the rest of the season, over 8 games, Will Levis completed just 57% of his passes. He averaged 196 yards per game. He had just 4 touchdowns, 4 interceptions. He took 26 sacks, which again, and over a 17-game pace, that's 55 sacks. He had a game where he had games where he took 4 sacks, 4 sacks, 6 sacks, 7 sacks. He took at least 2 sacks in all but 2 of his 9 starts. So he will get, and again, people want to blame the offensive line. I get it. I don't think that offensive line is a dominant unit yet by any means anyways. I don't think Will Levis is the kind of guy who's going to help an offensive line anyways. I think he's a guy who's going to give you some sacks. So, to me, you said the matchups, Montez Sweat versus little brother, I get that. To me, the matchup of this game is still this Bears secondary, if it's as good as it feels like it is, if it's as good as it's hyped up to be, versus those 3 wide receivers. Because the Titans head coach is Brian Callahan. He's a Shanahan McVay guy. You know, we know what they're going to try to do with Will Levis. There's going to be a lot of, they're going to try to run the ball. There's going to be a lot of under center play action off of that. You're going to get some screens. You're going to get some reverses, some misdirection. It's all going to be to try to do all the stuff that we know the Shanahan guys do to scheme open a quick first read look for Will Levis. If Matt Eberflus can stay ahead of the chess match, if they can just deny Will Levis that first read, I think the Bears can do some really impressive stuff on defense in this game, because I think the minute you start to make Will Levis have to buffer a little bit, I think that's what's going to, he's going to be buffering, and there's going to be a lot of chaos from there. So it just comes down to this. You know, coming down to Jalen Johnson, it's going to come down to Tyreek Stevens, it's going to come down to Kyler Gordon. Don't give Will Levis that quick, easy completion. Make him think about it, because I don't think thinking is his strong suit.
That's accurate. So. Yeah. All right. So that's so we've got our matchups on that side of the ball. The other side of the ball, I think we've kind of talked about it a bit already, but there's really only one matchup you got to be interested in here, and that's got to be Jeffrey Simmons against whichever guard and Coleman Shelton is lined up against him, right? That's priority number one in this game for the Bears. If you want to win the game, has to be stop Simmons, because that also has to be the win condition for the Titans, right? They don't have a ton of talent on the defensive side, but they have one game breaker, and he just so happens to be pointed at the biggest question mark on the team, maybe, right? The health and play of Nate Davis. Do you agree with me? Is that what you're going to be watching most this game? Because for me, I'm going to be holding my breath and watching, like, where is Simmons? Is he lined up against Tevin? Great. Yeah. Is he lined up against Nate Davis? Oh, my God.
Absolutely.
Are we going to be okay on this play?
Yeah, the potential, that's the one thing that has the potential to really wreck whatever the Bears want to do on this offense, for sure. And I do think Shane Waldron to me, like, you don't want the Bears to be in the situation that the Seahawks were in last year, because the Seahawks offensive line was just truly a disaster. But, like, the most encouraging thing about Shane Waldron's offense when you watch the Seahawks last year is that man knows how to scheme around your offensive line taking L's. They were incredibly good in early down situations. Where they struggled was expected pass situations when defensive lines were able to just tee off on their bad offensive line. So this is a guy, I don't think he's going to go out there like Matt Nagy did in that Justin Fields debut disaster. This is not a guy who's going to be lining up Caleb Williams a ton in empty necessarily. Although he could run a little bit of empty with Caleb, because we know Caleb is a little more confident in that and a little bit better at getting the ball out quick.
Kyle, I watched this weekend the Iowa Hawkeyes run at least five separate, five wide shotgun plays. All right. Like, I've never seen, maybe not five in the last 5 years for them. If that's possible, anything is possible. All right. Sorry, I had to put a Hawkeyes reference in there. They won 40-0, Kyle. Did you know that?
Against Illinois State, pal.
It doesn't matter. They put up 40 points. What's that? Do you remember what they did against North Dakota State a couple years ago? 7-3, two safeties and a field goal made up their seven. All right. 40 whole points. We take it. We take those as Hawkeye fans.
Yeah, all right. Let's see how El Asico goes this weekend.
Speaking of Hawkeyes, Kyle, how many punts and how beautiful for Torrey Taylor this Sunday?
I'm going to say four punts.
Okay.
All of them immaculate.
Goddamn right.
Yeah, I mean, there's... I think there'll be some field position games for sure here.
Yep.
I think Matt Eberflus will be more than happy if there's a situation where he's like, okay, well, I could go for it, or I could back Will Levis up against his own end zone and dare him to do something stupid. You know what? Mm-hmm. Let's try that option. So there could be a little bit of that. So
agreed.
I guess balls to the wall. What's your gut telling you for a final score here?
I am going to say 27-13 Bears. I'm guessing a couple mistakes by Will Levis turn tragic, get some easy points off of that. Probably slow start for the Bears offense. I'm like, the field goals are coming early. Like I said, I'm thinking a touchdown off a turnover for Will Levis, and then maybe Caleb finishes him off late, gives us something to hope for. But I think that line, that like 195 yards, one touchdown, hopefully no interceptions. I think that's the day we're looking at for Caleb here.
I think the specific line that I gave the other day in one of the Bears DMs I met, I predicted 17 of 28, 210 yards, like a touchdown. Not sure if there'll be an interception or not, but like, that's about where I'm at. My line for the Bear, for the score, I think I'm feeling Bears 24, Titans 20, but I almost feel like it's not as close as that. I'm almost thinking like a 24-13 with a garbage time score.
Okay.
Kind of deal. So gotcha. That's what I'm feeling. Yeah.
Flailing last minute onside kick.
Well, I kind of feel like it's close for about 2.5 quarters. The Bears get a big score either on offense or with Will Levis fucking up. Then they control the game from there. And then, like I said, like a garbage time score for the Titans to make the final margin look a little closer. That's what I'm feeling. But again, all of this with the caveat that, like, rookie QB making his first start, Caleb could throw a really dumb interception, guys, and it wouldn't be the end of the world. Just keep that in mind. But I know you all, and I know you all will panic. And I love that about you. So.
Yeah. And I mean, I think, I guess the greatest question mark for both teams, right? The one everyone's going to focus on is at quarterback. But I think even there, the Bears still have the advantage, right? With Caleb Williams, the Titans really don't know what they have with Will Levis, but I can tell you right now, it's almost certainly worse than what the Bears have with Caleb Williams. So I don't think they are better than the Bears as a team at any position except for where Jeffrey Simmons is playing. Yeah. So it's just hard, even in like a completely impartial environment, it's very difficult for me to think of a way for Tennessee to win this game or to be favored to win this game, right? It's not hard for me to think of a way they could win the game. Jeffrey Simmons destroying the game is that way.
Well, like I said, if this is a game that if it was week 11, I feel like I would have no problem being like, yeah, Bears easily.
Yep.
The only factor that makes this kind of cloudy for me is that it's Caleb Williams' first professional NFL start, and you can't rule out, you know, one kind of stupid mistake that I think he'll learn from, but, like, you know, there will be stupid mistakes, so...
He's going to throw interceptions this year, people. Like, he is going to throw, a bunch, probably. Like, let's say historically, probably, 12 at least. Like, 12 is the minimum. So, yeah, we're going to get some picks this season. It's okay. Even good quarterbacks throw interceptions here. I would love to see him get off to a good start. Let's roll into next week against C.J. Stroud and the Texans, you know, feeling good about ourselves. Have some fun with that matchup.
That said, there always exists the possibility that we have hedged for no reason and the kid just comes out and is the anointed one.
Yeah.
In which case, to be clear, we will immediately become the most insufferable human beings on Earth. Like, without question. If Caleb goes out there and has 300 yards in his first game, we will be insufferably smug forever. It will not end. So...
Every Bears fan knows that all we have been waiting for our entire lives is just a chance to be smug. We want to be Chiefs fans, folks.
We
don't want to overthrow them and introduce some kind of nice, happy, utopian football government. We want to become the boot, all right? Yeah. That's what we want as Bears fans.
Yeah, I mean, so I guess where I will end here is I will say this. There is a lot of we watched that Hard Knocks last night. We watched that ending montage, that beautiful ending montage. And I think my wife could read it on my face where she was like, you know, if this were any team but the Bears, I'd be like, wow, that really seems like, I think I'd be so optimistic for that team. But she's like, I'm so scared of what this could do to you if it went wrong, that I don't have any faith that it can go right. And I get that. We are nothing but scar tissue at this point. And Travis has hardened his heart and is telling you he will not be impressed by Caleb Williams until Caleb Williams gives him a reason. I get it. I've tried to be pragmatic and realistic all off season too. But here's what I would say if I was looking at this Bears team as an outsider perspective, and I know this because there are outsiders saying this, it's okay to have hope in this iteration of the Bears. It's okay to, I know it feels like we've been here before, but Caleb Williams is not Justin Fields, who was the thing, and this is something I tried to explain to you, the Bears are not cursed when it comes to developing quarterbacks. Here's the cold, hard, brutal fact. Developing quarterbacks is fucking hard. It's especially hard unless you just happen to draft one high multiple times. And we saw this with the Bengals, where the only time they've ever figured out the quarterback situation were Carson Palmer and Joe Burrow, and they had to get the number one overall pick to do that. The Bears went their entire history as an organization, basically, without getting the number one overall pick. And then they managed to get it 2 years in a row through various circumstances. But, Justin Fields was the fourth quarterback off the board. And I had reasons to believe in him. I talked myself into him. I thought there were reasons to believe. Everyone did. But the cold hard fact is there was a reason he was the fourth quarterback off the board. The league was trying to tell you what concerns they had about Justin Fields. And I know why we didn't listen. But they were there. Mitch Trubisky, do you remember the reaction when they took Mitch Trubisky at 2? Do you remember the what the fuckery and the national, the laughter, the jokes? I mean, instantly on sports talk radio, national radio, taking Mitch Trubisky became a joke. He got booed at a Bulls game, for God's sakes. Rex Grossman was the fourth quarterback off the board and ended up being a bad quarterback draft. Cade McNown was the fourth was he the fourth or the fifth? Hold on. Couch, McNabb, Akili Smith, Culpepper. Fifth quarterback. He was the fifth quarterback off the board in the draft. Jim Harbaugh was drafted at like number 26. All of these guys, the math would have told you, if they succeed, they're an outlier. If they succeed, they're the exception, not the rule. This is the first time where the guy they have, you know, in my lifetime, and not even in my lifetime, going even further back than my lifetime, I try to look into this. Basically, there have been a handful of situations in NFL history where there is this guy who has, for two full seasons, been penciled in as the number one overall pick in a draft. You know, everyone knew 2 years before the 1983 NFL draft happened that John Elway was going to be the first overall pick in it. Everyone knew 2 years before the 1998 NFL draft happened that Peyton Manning was going to be the first pick in it. They knew again with Eli Manning. They knew again with Andrew Luck. They knew again with Trevor Lawrence. Now they've known again for Caleb Williams. These guys, I mean, the worst case scenario there is what? Trevor, who has thrown for 4,000 yards in year two and year three, who has dragged the Jacksonville Jaguars to a playoff win, and I still don't understand why we have diminished that accomplishment or complained this kid's been a disappointment given the roster around him. The worst case scenario is what? Eli Manning, who was the 500 quarterback with a horseshoe up his ass for over 10 years. Like, these guys, listen to what the league is telling you about this guy. There is a reason people talked about tanking for him. There is a reason that he's so well thought of. There's a reason that the narrative is optimistic. There's a reason that neutral observers have come away from Bears camp impressed. The reason that Bengals beat writers were like, holy shit, this kid is the goods. I know it feels like we've been here before. We haven't been here before. And even if we had been here before, we've never had this kind of guy on this kind of team. This isn't a trash team like the one that welcomed Justin Fields. This is a guy entering a functional infrastructure. So I'm here to say, for as much as we are, I think, the jaded cynics of the Bears podcasting world, it's okay to hope. It's okay to hope. If I fight through all of my instincts, I can tell you, I think it's different this time. Now, it might not be
God.
Different.
Oh, God. Why would you? I'm going to delete that from the podcast so it doesn't go out there into the goddamn world, Kyle.
It might not be that different this Sunday, because even the great ones, they're going to take time. The guy's like, you're not stupid to hope. You're not.
Here's what I can tell you, folks. I am going to watch this game live with Kyle. We'll be in the same room watching this, and I'm going to make sure all of his chairs and recliners are safe. None of them will be flipped over the course of this game. That is my solemn oath. I will do my best to save the furniture. The one you're sitting on right now, Kyle, I will guard it with
my hand. I vow to flip no furniture until interception number 3 or sack number 5. I think that's where I'll draw those the furniture flipping line.
All right, I will keep an eye out for your furniture. We'll make sure everything's safe. Yeah, hopefully we come here next week, Kyle, and it makes it easy on me, and I can come out here and just be blasting off party poppers like, he's the next dude. He's the Michael Jordan of the NFL, because we're Chicago sports fans. But yeah, I am not on the hype train. I'm not going to get hyped up until the man has justified, until it's no longer hype. That's what we'll say.
Most importantly, I do need Austin Booker to get a sack, because then
then
you'll have to acknowledge Austin Booker, and then I will immediately get to call you a Johnny come lately and a fair weather bitch because you refuse to hop on board the Booker train when it the station.
So this has to be like a weekly thing, a weekly update. Will Travis acknowledge him? And if I don't have to acknowledge him yet, then I get to mercilessly attack you. And then the second he gets one sack, you just get to be like, you son of a bitch. we'll add that to the end of every single episode. It'll be like, did Austin Booker earn Travis's acknowledgement this week? The answer is going to be no. Spoiler alert. All right, man.
You talk about a guy who could exploit a matchup with Little Brother, maybe.
That's a good point. Shit, I didn't think about that. Oh, what if he does? What if he pulls a Dom Robinson out there and he gets two sacks immediately and then he's just gone for the rest of the season, but I had to acknowledge his existence?
Do not speak that evil into existence.
All right, fair enough. All right, Kyle. Well, next time we talk on this podcast, season will be started. So I'll see you then.
once more onto the breach.
Way out on that bumper's low. Now you know I'm leaving Chicago. And people I show do hate to go. Now you know I'm leaving here in the morning. Won't be back no more.